We are Rogue Media Sports.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. Matt Mosley, Ed Werder, and we've been in Oxnard for several days now, and Ed has had quite a day. It started, Ed, with us getting a text that there might not be any media parking, and we better get there as quickly as possible, because it was a massive traffic buildup trying to get into Cowboys. But Ed, through your help and others, I was able to come in just fine, and we made it in there. But we start the day with the guest we're going to have on this podcast, Stephen Jones. But Ed, from there, you just continued to go with it, and this was quite a momentous day, I would say, for both the Doomsday Podcast and then your work for ESPN.
Yeah, ESPN had me out here to cover the first practice and the initial opening of training camp press conference with Jerry Jones, Mike McCarthy, and today's guest, Stephen Jones. And then I stayed over to be a part of this big NFL weekend television partner initiative called Back Together Weekend in the NFL, where all teams are now in camp and on the practice fields. And so as part of that, we always try to, you know, we're on ABC for a couple of hours. And so the problem for me, Matt, was that the time we were on ABC, which is where we really want to bring it, the Cowboys are on the field. And so in previous years, I've gotten Dak Prescott one-on-one after this practice, but that wasn't going to be possible because of the time frame we were on. And so I got Jerry Jones live on ABC, and he was great. I thought we started off pretty funny in that I wanted to ask him about the most important news of this camp, which is somebody who's not here. You're going to hear Stephen Jones talk about this issue with Zach Martin's holdout. And I said to Jerry, you know, Zach Martin's not here. He's one of your best players, one of your most important players. And why don't you just do what Dak Prescott, your quarterback, said and pay the man? And Jerry, at 80 years old, without missing a second on live network television, basically says, well, the reason we can't do that is because the quarterbacks in general in the league have all the money. They're getting all the money. And so that's why I can't just pay Zach Martin like Dak Prescott wants me to. So that was great. And then, as you know, I hung around a little while after practice and all, and got Brian Schottenheimer, the new offensive coordinator, Marty Schottenheimer's son, who's known Mike McCarthy a very long time since they were together on Marty's staff in Kansas City. So I got a chance to talk with him about what he expects out of the Cowboy offense and Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy being re-energized calling plays. And, you know, I know we're going to drop that podcast in a day or two. And hopefully we can use the Troy Aikman interview that I did earlier in the week that aired today with him talking about some really relevant topics on the Cowboys. And his point of view is a very interesting one. He thinks Dak Prescott's had good teams since he came into the league, which is evident by the fact he went 13-3 and won 9 straight games as a rookie. But he thinks this might be the best of them.
Very, very interesting, and we've heard that from a few different people. But man, this Ed, that was you had quite a time hitting the ground running. Aikman, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones, Brian Schottenheimer. I mean, I you know, probably ought to just hang around in the morning, get Dan Quinn. I mean, hit the trifecta. That was a or what is the what's the four thing? But Ed, that was strong work. And today, this morning, Ed and I, and Ed, I think I should warn people. I mean, we did the best we could. We thought we were doing a good job getting away from the Mike McCarthy press conference to visit with Stephen, and we got him in a nice shady spot, and we thought that was going to be a pretty good spot. And then as we started the interview, it turned out that that was the staging area for like all the little kids who were going to go out and participate in the opening ceremonies.
They were carrying the helmets out. And it was a Salvation Army group was there trying to coordinate everything. And it was a lot of people yelling about cleaning up and so forth and so on. And we were in a VIP player only area.
Yeah.
It turned into something quite unexpected. But I think for the most part, it should be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And Frito, I don't know if I told you this, but at one point, one of the Salvation Army generals or whatever we call them, the officers, he was clapping a little bit. I don't know what the clapping was about. And Ed just turned around and shushed him. I kind of like that. Ed kind of gave him
I'm not a soldier in the Salvation Army. They can't try me for treason.
It's just the Salvation Army. My goodness, he was out there with his kettle. All right, it is the Doomsday Podcast, and without further ado, this was our sit down with Chief Operating Officer and Executive Vice President of Player Personnel, Stephen Jones. Werder, Mosley, Stephen Jones. Here is the interview.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, Oxnard, California. Third day of Cowboys training camp, opening ceremonies. Stephen Jones, Chief Operating Officer, Executive Vice President of Player Personnel, in charge of AT&T Stadium, joining us now. Well, he has all those titles. And
Stephen, only Jerry has more titles.
By the way, pretty exciting day. I mean, even getting in here today, the traffic, I mean, it's just enormous. I don't know if there's enough parking.
It's miles long.
It really is. It's back to Thousand Oaks, I think. But it's got to be kind of an exciting day for everybody.
Yeah, it is. It's so great to be out here in Southern California, and we have a fan base that goes all the way back to Thousand Oaks, when Tex and they used to bring the team out here. And of course, we had our first training camp ever out here at Thousand Oaks, and of course, we've just built on that. Jerry and I actually remember vividly coming out here to practice against the Raiders when Al would practice here at Oxnard, and great experience then to, have one of the all-time greats and Al Davis out here, and the way he ran his practices were a little different. I think there wasn't a soul allowed other than the staff. And so quite a contrast to the way we do it today. But it is great to have all these fans out here. We do have a large contingent of Cowboy fans that love to come out here. Obviously, the weekends are a big deal here in this area, as a lot of these guys are hardworking people that work during the week, but get a chance to get away and get a little football on them here on the weekends. And certainly it's great to be kicking off camp with the leadership here in Oxnard, the mayor and the council members, and the leadership here is certainly exciting to be here. And we're easing on out of the acclimation period as we head toward the home stretch here. And Monday, of course, we'll pat them up and get to work.
So you mentioned Thousand Oaks in 1989. That was your first training camp, Jerry's first training camp, Troy Aikman's first training camp. And Troy won the first of his three Super Bowls with the Cowboys when he was 26. The only other quarterback to win Super Bowls for the Cowboys was Roger Staubach. He won two, and he was 29 when he won his first. Today, of all days, Dak Prescott turns 30. Which gives him the opportunity to be the only Cowboys quarterback in history this year to win his first Super Bowl at the age of 30. So what are your expectations for him this upcoming season?
Well, I don't want to speak for Dak. I know what Dak's expectations are, is he wants to win that Super Bowl this year. And certainly we're all for that. I think we're so fortunate to have him. He represents all the things you want in a quarterback, tremendous leadership, tremendous work ethic. He's just a never say die attitude to get better each and every day. He just represents what you want in that position. And certainly I know he's got high expectations for this year to improve upon what he did last year. We put together two really nice seasons, albeit not good enough in the playoffs, and we all know we got to take that next step and move that success past the regular season and have more success if you will, and certainly hopefully creep up on that championship, but have the success we need to have in the postseason as well.
Jerry said something interesting at the opening press conference. He said, when I look at where we are with Dak, when I see where we are with Tyron Smith, the experienced players who have played great for the Cowboys that aren't here anymore, whose window was missed. Is there a concern within the organization about missing your window with the great players you have now that are 30, who Pro Bowlers, and like you said, just haven't played their best yet?
I don't think we think like that. I think it's the time is now. We're focused on this year. We're not focused on big windows. We're focusing on being the very best football team we can for the upcoming season. And certainly I think we've done some things in the off season that are going to give us an opportunity, I think, to have a better football team. Whether you look at the things we did via trade with Gilmore and Cooks, I think two really high-end players that are going to step up and make a difference. I think we had another solid draft, certainly bringing Mazi Smith in here to shore up the run. I think what we do best, and certainly I think DQ reiterates that, is we get pressure on the passer and we take away the ball. And if we can shore up that run defense and get them into the second longs, third and longs, then I think more good things are going to happen for this defense. So, in general, we feel really good. Obviously, getting a dynamic player like Cooks, who brings a lot of juice to the table. I think Gallup is going to take that next step. A lot of skilled players do, coming off ACLs that first year. Not necessarily usually their best year coming back, but I think he's got a lot of confidence in what he can do and get back into form. And certainly we got one of the best in the business in CeeDee Lamb. And, of course, Tony Pollard's going to get his chance now to really get more touches and be even more dynamic. I mean, he's obviously been a guy who, when he touches the ball, does big things and makes big plays. And he'll get more opportunities to do that, more touches, and, feel really good about this football team.
What's the biggest thing you've done to make sure Dak, the interceptions, there's probably a lot of reasons for them. What do you think's the biggest thing you've done to address that that's going to help, maybe hopefully him go back to what he did for most of his career?
Well, I think Kellen Moore did a great job while he was here. But, the biggest thing is Mike has really, Mike McCarthy, our head coach, moving him into that play calling mode along with assistance from Schottenheimer. I know they've studied every interception, every ball that could have been intercepted, and really worked through that with Dak and what he can do differently. Certainly, as we all know, when you're a quarterback, you never hear it out of his mouth, but sometimes those interceptions aren't always the quarterback's fault. It can be miscommunication. As I said, he'd never say that, but anyway, I just think between Coach McCarthy, and his new role as play caller now, and Coach Schottenheimer, they've really, I think, done a great job of pouring through each and every play last year, and really want to do some things there that will make this offense better and certainly more efficient, and I think consequently more productive.
You had a high-scoring offense under Kellen Moore until you got to the 49ers in the playoffs the last 2 years. They eliminated you both times. I think you scored a total of 30 points. How much of the changes you made offensively, including Mike calling the play, something he did for 13 years in Green Bay, how much of all of that was a fallout from just not getting it done against a great 49ers defense in the postseason?
You know, I think if you continue to do the same thing over and over again and expect things to be different, then, you're sticking your head in the sand a little bit. And so, that's a big part of the change is to try to take the next step. And, certainly, you mentioned, the production against San Francisco. One of the things you got to do to be productive is protect the ball. And, we had some turnovers at some inopportune times against the 49ers. Hats off to them. They got one of the best defenses in the NFL as well. And, they had a hand in that. But we think we're certainly going to work right now with ways that we can carry that production on through the playoffs and have the success we need to have to win a championship.
Does Mike seem maybe reinvigorated even at getting to go back to doing what he loved doing so many years? Do you sense that even almost a renewed energy with him related to that?
Well, there's no question, and it entails a lot of work. Mike's he's a big believer. If you're going to call it, you got to install it. And that therein lies a whole lot of work once you get into installing the offense and installing what you need to do to be the play caller. And Certainly, you know, we've had coaches here from Jason to Mike. Mm-hmm. You know, Jason transitioned from a play caller to a walk-around head coach. Mike's obviously called the plays as a head coach, and he's also walked around as a head coach. And as we all know in this league, it's done a lot of different ways. And, you know, people call the plays, and they give them up, then they take them back. So, you know, I think that's a natural progression, especially when you're trying to take the next step. And hats off to Mike, you know, in terms of stepping up here and doing this. And I think it'll pay dividends for us.
You mentioned the trades, somewhat uncharacteristic for veteran players like Stephon Gilmore at corner and Brandon Cooks at wide receiver. How much of that is a reflection of, like, you only make that move if you think you're going to contend?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things about a trade, too, versus signing a player in free agency, obviously have to give up resources and draft picks, but you can get some nice cap situations where the team has paid for you know, some of the signing bonuses and guarantees, and, you know, you're in a situation where it can be, you know, a resource, if you will, in terms of the cap situation. And both those cases, I think they were. But I do agree with you. We're trying to find the right players, you know, to add to this team that, you know, I think is already a very solid football team. But to be able to add a couple of guys is a big deal.
You know, it has to be weird. You talked about Tony Pollard. I mean, it has to be a little strange to look in that running back room after all these years with Zeke. Now, what's that like right now? Because you're excited about Tony having the opportunity, but you lose a tremendous leader and a guy who guys really look to. What's that transition like right now?
Well, it's hard. I mean, I think I mentioned at the opening press conference, we've had some great backs in this organization. Certainly two of the all-time greats in Dorsett and Smith. And certainly Zeke's right there with him in terms of, you know, obviously he was a high pick and we were committed to him. And, you know, he did nothing but run the ball and was productive. And as you said, you know, he's such a fierce competitor. He played through a lot of things probably a lot of players wouldn't have. I mean, he just played through injury. And, you know, at the end of the day, you miss that. And certainly he sets the tone. And to not have him in there is a tough deal because of how much respect we do have for Zeke and all he's done for our franchise and our organization.
There's a lot of talk in the NFL about the devaluation of running backs. Here, even despite the Zeke move, you've got Tony Pollard playing this year on the franchise tag for $10 million. And Mike's talked about, hey, he ran the ball more last year than he ever has. On a percentage basis by design, 45%, that's the most in his 17 years as a head coach. And he said he still wants to run the ball more. He wants to be more efficient in that regard. So given all of that, why was having Tony Pollard play on the franchise tag the right move for you?
Yeah, I mean, we had negotiations with Tony, and we made offers on long-term deals. And, you know, you do that with guys who, you know, when you franchise them. We did the same thing the year before. You know, with the tight end position and Schultz. So, you know, you do everything you can to get a long-term deal. If it doesn't work out, that's why we do have the tag. It was collectively bargained. And, you know, it doesn't just affect running backs. It affects tight ends. It affects quarterbacks. It can, you know, Dak played under a tag. So, you know, we've had nothing but the old respect for running backs, where we've drafted them, how we've paid them. You know, I just know how we feel. I can't speak for 31 others. I know how we feel about the running back position. And certainly, as you said, we're paying a lot of money for another running back this year.
So the other day, talking briefly about the guy who's not here, Zach Martin, Mike said his priorities on offense are make sure Dak stays healthy and plays every game, improve the pass protection, run the football efficiently. All of those things are easier to achieve if Zach Martin is playing right guard. He's holding out of camp right now. Dak said, pay the man. Why is it not that easy?
Well, I always love how players, and as they should, take up for one another. And certainly that's the natural way things should be. And we understand that. But, you know, when you're running a business, there's a lot of things that go into that. Certainly Zach's under contract. But no one respects Zach Martin more than the Joneses. What he's done, I mean, he's everything you want when you pick a player in the first round. He's represented everything from doing things, always doing things the right way, being a great soldier, being a great teammate. He's as good as they get. And I'm sure he's going to find his proper place in the Hall of Fame. But we're just nothing but Zach Martin fans, but obviously not going to get into any type of details in terms of the business.
If you held out, I'm pretty confident Dak would say the same thing to Jerry. He'd deliver the same message publicly. Hey, the man.
He would be really worried about me, I can assure you. He's worried about those guys.
As he should be.
I mean, in some ways, though, if you have to have a holdout, this is the guy to have a holdout because he's a veteran. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't need work, but you probably do trust that he could come in here and be ready to go even at the last minute.
I think Zach's been around the block for sure, and we all see what happens. It's just the nature of our game, but you look around the league and, you know, these players, even in an acclimation time frame, players get hurt. And, read around, seeing where Burrow hurt his calf. Obviously, we had Dono hurt his calf here.
Jalen Ramsey.
So, this is a long, long preseason that we're getting ready to go through right here. And we can get a lot accomplished and at the end of the day, these camps are more for the young guys and getting them reps and seeing who can step up and help us. And we'll get to see a lot of that over the next month. And look forward to it.
We probably ought to let you address the success the front office had out here in getting a deal done with Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah.
His average is now the fifth highest in the NFL at his position.
Right.
He obviously leads the NFL in interceptions since he came into the NFL at 17 in that time period. What's the significance of getting that deal done, and how does it affect the CeeDee Lamb negotiations, the Terrence Steele negotiations, and ultimately Micah Parsons in 2024?
It's ongoing. I mean, that's just the nature of our game. You like to have these situations. That means you're drafting well. When you got a Diggs, when you got a CeeDee Lamb, when you got the Steels of the world, who was a college free agent, but still are really playing well for us. Certainly you got one of our better picks ever in terms of Micah Parsons that'll be coming up. So all of these things are things that we have to work into when we're trying to figure out our overall salary cap. And we know that we're going to continue to have pressure on our cap. Believe it or not, we did a shorter term deal with Dak, and Dak will be up here right around the corner. So that's just part of our business. You're always looking to do things that make a lot of sense for the team and for the player, and certainly that's what we did with Diggs, and we'd certainly love to do the same thing with a guy like CeeDee. We certainly want him around here long term, and then you just see where it goes from there, and you know what the cap situation will be like, and you work off that.
Do you get heartburn when you see Herbert, Burrow, some of these that just, it's not going down, is it?
Never goes. That's a good thing, because that means the NFL business is doing good.
Okay.
Because the players participate in the success of the league revenue. So if the league revenues aren't going up, that's not a good thing for anybody.
But
if they are going up, then the cap goes up.
Dak at $40 million is like ninth in the NFL now.
Hard to believe that, but that's right.
Team-friendly deal.
Yes.
And by the way, sorry we chose the loudest spot on campus to do this podcast interview. It's a staging area.
He focuses through it pretty well.
Oh, he really does. You and I are both like, is there anything we can do? Yeah.
We're shushing the Salvation Army.
I know. The cadets are
not sure that's right.
Yeah. Last thing, Stephen, for you, I did want to ask about Mazi Smith, something you, we talked about him. He talked about what he could do, stopping the run. I mean, as you've finally kind of gotten to be around him, see him in this environment and everything. Not in pads yet till
which
Monday.
Which is the most important. play in grades.
So far, is it kind of confirming what you thought? Is this a guy you kind of ease in, or is this a guy, hey, we need you to day one be ready to roll here up front?
You hope your first-rounders are plug and plays.
Yeah.
And certainly he's demonstrated what we knew about him. He's a very, very uniquely strong, rare strength. In terms of his ability in there. Now, as Ed so rightfully mentioned, until we see him in pads, you don't really know for sure. But we got to see him in a lot of pads and pads at Michigan and against great competition. So I don't think there's going to be any surprises there. I think he's going to be a guy. He's a huge help to Dan Quinn and what we need to be on defense right away. You know, I know Dan's already got some good packages with him. You know, him and Hankins together in terms of, you know, really shoring up. Not that we were bad, but we can be better in the run game.
Hey, I think you probably don't get enough credit from the media for back-to-back 12-win seasons and just how stacked this roster really is with talent. I mean, when you look around. So I guess all you need now is to just win in the playoffs like you used to do when you first started.
That's it, but we got to take care of business from the start. And you got to get there first. And as you said, I mean, we've been fortunate that we have been able to, you know, be consistent the last couple of years in terms of, you know, winning during the regular season, taking care of our business and putting ourselves in a position to have success. We will, when the time comes, have to take that next step.
Like Mike McCarthy said, you can't knock the door down if you're not on the front porch.
That's it.
You've been on the front porch. And, you know, talking to Troy Aikman the other day, he made the point that, hey, you know, Dak's had really good teams every year he's been here, but in Troy's opinion, this is the best team that he's had. So
We feel really good the same way, and we just got to get out there and work to get better each and every day, one step at a time, and good things will happen to this football team.
Appreciate the time with
you, Stephen. We do. And, does it throw you off when Ed compliments you like that?
Yes.
Is that almost
when
kind
the
of
media
a
does,
weird,
period.
That's when you.
As Ed said.
Well, you ask him a bunch
target
of ball busting questions. Coming off two 12 win seasons,
I
it
know
only seems fair to acknowledge
that's right
that there has been some success. Like most people talk about your playoff failure, but I mean, last year you did make progress. You won your first playoff game under Mike McCarthy.
Decisively.
You won on
the
road against Tom Brady. You hadn't won a playoff game on the road since the championship game in 95. So, I mean, that is progress. It's not ultimately what you want to achieve.
It's not our ultimate goal, but we are making progress.
Yeah.
Now we need to continue. And hopefully a bigger step.
That is Stephen Jones on the Doomsday Podcast.
All right, and Ed, lots of, I think, interesting. We had about 20 minutes there with Stephen, and we kind of caught him right before he had to go out and take part in the opening ceremonies. I thought that was funny. As I was making my way out of the Cowboys camp, I heard Charles Haley talking. Then I heard Jerry talking about Charles Haley. I mean, the whole thing turned into like a celebration of Charles Haley. I thought we were opening camp as I was trying to leave. And now, by the way, just as we're taping this late on Saturday night, Jerry showed up in the pre-fight room with Errol Spence Jr. And Spence and Crawford fight us tonight in Vegas. So Jerry went from Oxnard. He got to Vegas, and he's at the fight tonight. And as we speak, Ed, and I'm a huge Spence Jr. fan, he's already been knocked down twice in this fight. Terrence Crawford's already knocked him down twice, so I am very concerned about this.
Well, Micah Parsons was talking about him at his press conference and said, you know, that's his guy, and he's really nervous for his guy, and apparently with good reason, based on the early returns.
Yes, yes, but we hope he can bounce back a little bit. Now, Ed, today we're getting closer to the first padded practice. I think – and you might question our choice at some point. We've had great interviews, but we seem to always leave right before they put the pads on. One of these years, we might ought to watch a few padded practices.
And I was thinking the problem for us with our schedule is we always leave right before Jerry takes everybody to Malibu and Nobu on the ocean for the media party. I've missed it every year.
Correct. Yeah.
And I'm sure it's a coincidence. I'm sure Jerry doesn't know that I won't be able to attend. I mean, that's when he books it for. But you know what? If I had to choose between getting Jerry on live TV today from training camp as practice was beginning or going to Nobu, I would have picked going to Nobu.
Yeah, I need to go back and pick Nobu. I like that. Ed would have gone with Nobu over it. I love that. By the way, there's always in the media has a way of sensing that Johnny Walker Blue or whichever the Johnny Walker
that's
is really
the one
expensive. Yeah, and they'll get into some of Stephen and Jerry's bottles of that, right? And they've been known to kind of
it's the only way they ever get into those bottles, expensive as they are.
That's right. Now, Ed, you were at practice today, and then I'm just kind of wondering from all the different interviews, and of course here in a couple of days, like you said, we'll maybe put out a Schottenheimer episode as well, and then let you hear a little bit of Ed's conversation with Troy Aikman, and I think that's a really cool thing because there's a lot of symmetry here. Ed was with Jerry on his first camp, obviously with Troy on his first camp. You know, we talked to Steven today. Steven was just fresh out of Arkansas, basically. I mean, he started on a Arkansas Orange Bowl team in 1986. And by 89, he was a young executive. And at that point, Ed, they had like three VP roles. And I don't know if that was Steven. I don't know exactly who that was, but Steven did have one of those roles. But, man, it was really interesting. Ed, what would you say as you kind of get ready to come back to the Metroplex, what are your kind of biggest takeaways just after being out there for about 4 or 5 days?
Well, you know, as I suggested to Steven in giving him some unexpected praise, you know, I really do think they really have a lot of talent on this team on both sides of the ball. And at some point, I mean, we criticize Jerry in the front office and Steven, but I mean, what the job that Will McClay does every year of bringing in really good young players and what the coaching staff, what Mike McCarthy and the coaching staff has done in developing those players and playing them early in their careers and having back-to-back 12. I mean, at some point, really, the players have to play. I mean, the players, the great players who are making all the money, they got to do it in these playoff games, and that's what's missing. You know, the quarterbacks threw two interceptions against the 49ers. They've scored a total of 30 points in two losses to the 40. Yeah, the 49ers have a great defense. And that defense of Dan Quinn's has led the NFL in takeaways 2 years in a row, one takeaway in the two games against the 49ers, or in the two playoff games last year, and that was that end zone interception of Tom Brady. But I think at some point, these guys, just like Troy says, they got to play their best football in January. You know, that was the hallmark of the 90s teams. That's why they were so successful. They played their best ball in the biggest games. And this collection of players, for whatever reason, hasn't. Maybe the addition of guys we've been watching and been impressed with at these practices, Stephon Gilmore at corner, and Brandon Cooks at wide receiver, maybe those guys will make a big enough difference. They do have Super Bowl experience. And I do think that, you know, Dan Quinn made the point when I asked him about it yesterday. You know, the great thing about having Stephon Gilmore out there is he's not only coaching up Trayvon Diggs, you know, on the field and in the weight room and in the meeting rooms, but he's also coaching up these receivers. Like, hey, I've been doing this for 10 years. You know, here's what you got to work on. Here's how you beat this. And I think Cooks does the same thing for the rest of the receiving group and for the young corners on the team. So I think those are two guys who have really gotten my attention. I know you've probably have a couple different guys that maybe a little bit more obscure than those two, but please share those with us.
Well, you know, I do like to do kind of my picks to click when I get out there and take a peek around. And you mentioned Cooks. Once you know, that's the one thing you can see where they're not in pads is just pure speed. And that it's pretty impressive. And he's got that gear that he can get to the top end speed in a hurry. And quite honestly, maybe a little bit, he can get there. Like, I'm not saying he's faster. He probably is faster than CeeDee Lamb. He's just kind of shiftier and can do some different things. And I think some of that that there's going to be some good position flex type things. You know, Ed, you got me thinking about I thought that was interesting what Dak said the other day about – I don't know how that came up or if somebody planted that idea on him, but about 2016 having had such a great season right away, and obviously he and Zeke were both up for like – I mean, rookie of the year, but almost could have been considered like MVPs or something, that he said he thought he may have thought it was too easy and that it, quote, messed with his mind. Now, he kind of caught himself and he said, hey, but I don't want anything to be hard. I've never wanted anything to be – or I'm sorry. I don't want anything to be easy. I'm fine with things being hard. But I thought that was interesting that he kind of looked back on that and said perhaps because in some sense, Ed, he's kind of been out in the desert for a while. While he's had a really nice career, he gets hurt. He gets hurt on kind of a, you know, a fairly pretty much an annual basis these days.
He's missed 17 games in the last 3 years. And, you know, one of the things that Mike McCarthy said, his goals as he's becoming the play caller for the first time, his goals are, first of all, to have Dak healthy for 19 or 20 games this year, something that hasn't happened since 2019. He said he wants to him to get the ball out more quickly in the offensive design and the system that Mike is, you know, bringing in the new elements. There's going to be an emphasis on that. And it was interesting to me that they said the biggest point of emphasis and change is really the backs and pass protection. That's interesting to me that you would let Ezekiel Elliott go, that being the case, because I think Tony Pollard is far better with the ball in his hands than he is blitz pickup. And I would think, you know, if you have a role for Deuce Vaughn, it's not going to be as a blocker. And, you know, Deuce Vaughn, by the way, who did appear as our guest the other day on our previous training camp show, I noticed today he's getting some first team reps with the offense. Yeah. That was surprising to me. And, you know, they've got the backs out lined up as wide receivers. So I think Mike's really committed to trying to create space in the offense, create some easier throws for Dak Prescott, change the equation so he doesn't have so many tight window throws. He led the NFL in that as well as interceptions. And that's not, to me, a coincidence. And everybody's, you know, concerned about Dak Prescott and all these interceptions. It, to me, last year was the aberration. You know, that was a career high, 15 interceptions, two more against the 49ers. But again, he's throwing into tight windows. There were some batted balls. They weren't all his fault. He takes the blame, and I guess rightly so. If you're a quarterback, you have to do that. But I just don't really worry about Dak Prescott's judgment or, you know, whether he properly prioritizes protecting the ball. I think he's always done that. He did it as a young player. I don't think he's gotten reckless. I just think, from a lack of talent standpoint, they made it harder on him by only giving him two receivers last year that he could depend upon.
Yeah, so, and that's kind of been, Ed, something that they've had before. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago or several years ago, we talked to Steven, you remember, and they went into a camp, and it was like they didn't even have one feature.
It was after they cut Dez.
Yeah.
And we talked to Scott Linehan. And they were all pretending that, oh, this is going to be better not to have a designated obvious number one because the defense isn't going to know how to allocate its coverage. Well, the defense doesn't have a problem when everybody they have on the field is better than anybody you're sending out on a route. So,
yeah, that was a rough one, man. I don't know.
I think that's really twice in recent years during the Dak era. That's twice that, while I gave the front office credit earlier, you could certainly question whether they properly appreciated, evaluated, and prepared the receiver group.
All right. Sadly, Terrence Crawford has taken out Errol Spence Jr. And that fight is over, sadly, as we start to wrap this thing up. I did want to say, Ed, that a couple of picks to click. Jalen Tolbert, the wide receiver, did some good things in this camp so far, and he's made some plays. It seems to really have come back, and I thought that was interesting. Ed, that was one of the things Brian Schottenheimer, who, again, you talked to today, talked about just the – I think he was talking about Jalen with just incredible note-taking. Ed, I hope you showed Shoddy your notes, okay, because you're a great note-taker.
I'm a little obsessive about
that. iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe more than me, but that's okay. Now, I would also – most people are. The John Stretch Stevens – undrafted tight end has been turning some heads. Look for him. He's a big 6'6 tight end. And Ed, that's kind of an interesting part of the team because while they have some interesting parts, Jake Ferguson is basically your starting tight end. And then Peyton Hendershot, you know, McEwen is a guy that they like. This is not a, I don't think you would look at this as a dynamic group, but you know, I think Dak needs to establish which one of these guys is going to be his guy in a hurry. And it probably needs to be Jake Ferguson, at least early.
I think that's the biggest question mark on the offensive part, offensive phase of the football team is who's going to emerge as a tight end. Because if you look at Dak Prescott's numbers throwing to Dalton Schultz, they were like up there with anybody in football in terms of, you know, passing success, throwing to the tight end. So that's a position that Dak really does rely on. And I think Ferguson showed last year better than they had expected from a rookie. And that's what made them feel okay with the fact of, you know, letting Dalton Schultz go sign with the Texans and using the franchise tag last year applied to him on Tony Pollard at $10 million this year. But I think that, to me, other than the tight ends, the biggest thing that has to get resolved is this holdout with Zach Martin. You know, they haven't had a holdout since 2019. Ezekiel Elliott held out until, 72 hours before the start of the regular season. Then the Cowboys, you know, signed him to a deal that was the highest for any running back in football, something Jerry and Steven said they would never do. And it's a contract they greatly regret. It's the reason Zeke's not here now. And we do have a little Zeke news to share. But they got to get this done with Zach Martin. And my sense today, really for the first time, I think we got a clear sense that this is a stalemate that may last a while, because Jerry did not seem at all concerned. He actually acted as if quite dismissive about the whole thing, saying nothing has to be done. He'll come to camp when he comes to camp, and he's not worried about it. And for Zach Martin, I think it's, you know, a matter of principle that, you know, he's well underpaid based on, you know, the market value of what he's done. He's arguably the best interior offensive lineman in the league, and there are guys who are making $7 million a year more than him. And Jerry's point of view, as you may have heard, is, you know, hey, I got a lot of young guys to pay. You've been paid as a first-round pick since you came into the league. You've made a lot of money.
Yeah.
You made a lot of money in the first 4 years of this contract when it was favorable to you. And part of the reason we agreed to it was because later in the deal is going to be more favorable to us when we needed it for guys like Trayvon Diggs and Micah Parsons, who's going to be a $30 million a year guy, and CeeDee Lamb. And so I think this seems to be shaping up as something that may not be resolved until pretty close to the start of the regular season. Although I do think, and maybe part of that is, you know, Zach Martin posted some videos of him working out. So now the Cowboys are assured that he's working out. They probably suspected he was, but now you see it for sure. And he's the kind of guy who is so good at what he does naturally, and he's played so long that, like Zeke, he could go right up until 72 hours before the kickoff against the Giants and start.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And, Ed, I think my interpretation of what Jerry told you was that Zach Martin is one of the most ungrateful Hall of Famers he's had. No, they love Zach Martin, and they feel okay about it. And just like you said, they know he could come in and be ready to go. And so they're not exactly, although Ed, it'd be nice to work with the rest of the line at some point. I mean, you would like to see that happen. Now, Ed, lastly, the other night, we did have a nice evening. We went to a pizza joint, and then several of the media, we made our way down and watched a band. I wish you could remember the name of that band. It was like the
Heather's on Fire.
Oh yeah. Heather's on Fire. Heather's on Fire did a nice job. Kind of I would almost call them like a Fleetwood Mac cover band or something along those lines.
They played a lot of 70s cover music, and they did a Fleetwood Mac song. And I felt good about leaving after that, because I'm a huge Fleetwood Mac fan. But yeah, it was Under the Palm Trees, Under the Moon. You know, they had a little tapestry set out on the street, which had been closed to traffic. And it was nice. And I thought we had a big evening. And then I saw Clarence posted on his Twitter account a video of the event. And boy, it looked sad. It was just a lot of people older than me doing things they probably shouldn't be doing in public.
But it was amazing to see the one guy, kind of the James Brown moment when he was out there on a scooter. And he had his knee.
He had a medical scooter
because he had his foot was in a cast or whatever, a walking boot. And then he was moved by the spirit or that song. And he jumped out there and started dancing all around, like in a big, aggressive way. And I think that other guy who was out there hopping around kind of got him going. I got out there for just a moment, but then I sat back down and got up on the good foot. His stretch
was you and John Machota were sitting on a bus stop bench with a elderly woman holding a dog in her lap. That was your night.
And that was my wildest night there, by the way. That's as crazy as it gets. But, you know, we age, we get a little age on us, and we go home a little sooner. All right, Ed, glad you had a wonderful meal this evening at one of our favorite longtime haunts there, Cafe Fiore. And so we're trying to keep the local economy in good stead there in Ventura. Ed, appreciate it. Strong, strong day for you. I think you can feel very good about yourself sitting up in first class tomorrow on your way home. I appreciate it, sir.
Let's do it again soon.
Okay. For Ed Werder and Mark Frito Friedman and Frito Nation Productions, I'm Matt Mosley. Good night from Oxnard, California.